Hi, this is David Milch. I'm the creator of Deadwood and the executive producer, and I wrote this first episode. I'm going to talk to you a little bit now, try to distract you from whatever defects you identify. If anyone figures out what the horse means, please contact me sooner rather than later. The horse in the credits. It's always eluded my understanding. Although I own horses, and typically they elude my understandings. Equine mystification before the inscrutable behavior of mortals. I don't think that's it. This was this incident is taken from a biography of Bullock, of Seth Bullock, written by, I think, his great nephew.
Is that some sort of a letter, Marshal?
Journal.
Journal. Good. You know, I was going to Deadwood same as you.
Is that so?
I had my plans about set. I only wish to Christ I could get these past 3 days back.
I can imagine.
No law at all in Deadwood. Is that true?
Being on Indian land.
That's one of the things that really drew me to the story, was the fact that Deadwood had no law.
If I'd have got there, I'd have been prospecting. Jesus Christ Almighty.
I'd been writing shows, mostly cop shows, which had to do with the intersection of law and order, or the failure to intersect. And I was interested in what it would be like to examine a society where there was order, more or less, but no law whatsoever. That's Michael Park's kid.
Flesh wound. Don't look like it wants to infect.
Well, never mind flesh wounds, sir. When you are going to meet your maker, you don't feature telling him that you shot a marshal in the shoulder for only doing his legally ordained job.
You may have heard worse stories.
God? Well, if he ain't, I'll tell him six or seven, just on people of my own personal acquaintance. I'd like to suggest an idea to you, sir, that I pray as a Christian man you will entertain on its own fucking merits.
That juxtaposition of rhetoric, of religious and profane, or religious and obscene, that got us in all kinds of trouble.
And if once we hit Deadwood, you didn't want to have anything to do with me.
It just seemed to me that that would have been the way that they spoke, and everything that I read, both in the primary materials about Deadwood itself and more generally about the language of the West, supported that idea. But I think the fact that people took offense had more to do with the conventions of the Western as it, you know, had developed from the 30s on, rather than any, you know, realistic understanding of the way people had spoken in the previous century. There's a good book about that that H.L. Mencken wrote called The American Language. And then there are dictionaries of obscenity, and there's Marvel Comics, although that really has nothing to do with it.
Now tell me what kind of fucking luck I got.
All you're doing stalling, Bullock, is pissing me off! Because I guarantee you ain't making it through in there till sunup! So why don't you climb out from behind your bed and your big brick building, and you bring Clell Watson out of here so we can give him what he fucking deserves!
It was such a strange incident because the vigilantes wanted to hang this guy, and Bullock was going to hang him 6 hours later, but he just hated the mob so much. He risked his life. He risked his partner's life.
That's a deal, you loudmouth cocksucker.
Hey, this ain't right. My sister was coming in the morning.
What'd you have her told?
That's not enough of a drop. I'll strangle for 20 minutes.
I'll help you with the drop.
It only took us about four passes at filming this scene before we got it right. I think after the third one, I tried to get hanged.
Any more gunplay gets answered. You called the law in, Samson. You don't get to call it off just because you're liquored up and popular on payday.
You don't get to tell us what to do and what not to do. Because you're leaving Montana anyways. Now, do not jump off of that stool, you cocksucker!
Or what? You'll kill me?
That's known as irony.
Sister, if my boy turns up, raise him good.
What else?
Tell her, give him my boots.
What else?
Tell him. Bullock's partner, that was Sol Starr. He was a real guy, too. He wound up being the mayor of Deadwood for 10 terms.
He asked God's forgiveness.
Anything else?
You helped me with my fucking fall.
Come ahead.
Fuck you!
That's, that guy you just saw, that's Gary LaFeu. He was a world bull riding champion. He's in the Hall of Fame. And when I was researching the show, I went up to Deadwood and spent about 10 days with him. He'd ridden up there about 20 years before.
Stay back! Move the fuck back while my partner... Well, my partner's taking his sweet-ass time writing whatever the fuck he's writing over there.
Who'll give his last Sometimes word? When you're writing a show and you see that, and you're on the set and it's taking too long for something to happen, then you improvise a piece of dialogue like that. Well, my partner's taking his sweet-ass time writing whatever the fuck he's writing.
Thank you. Let's go.
Tim Oliphant's a handsome youth, isn't he? If I'd been that handsome, I never even would have tried to make an honest living. The holdup, huh?
Same wagon and no damn room to maneuver.
Sounds like it's tighter out there in a bull's ass and fly season.
I wanted Hickok to look like he was lying in state from the first we saw him because it seemed to me he was kind of living into a premature.
I don't want any casualties on my conscience.
That's right from the first. He kind of went out there to die.
It's only Wild Bill Hickok you got stalled here in the muck. You ignorant fucking cunts.
Calamity Jane, by every account, was the most obscene person that God had ever made. You know, inveterate drunks fall down drunks used to leave the bar when she'd go in. That's called CGI, and if anyone knows what that means, and they know the importance of the horse, I will send you back my collection of Cheerio box tops. They had open shaft mines right in the middle of the camp. And you know, 14 months later, they had telephones. They had telephones there before San Francisco had telephones. That's one of the things that drew me to the story, was it was like a kind of accelerated version of the whole American experience. There was, in April of 76, there was nothing, and by December of 77, there were phones. Who cares about the phones?
Hands only. No construction.
Corner location.
In advance.
That's Earl Brown, plays Dan Doherty. That was a real guy, too.
You'll find it. Everybody does.
$8 of gold at $20 an ounce is $160 plus $10 for a half ounce makes $170 total.
Inform your dealers and whores of my credit and pour me a goddamn drink.
Honor and a pleasure, my good man.
That's Ian. And Jim Beaver.
170 credit, Dan, for Ellsworth.
Yes, sir. 170 for Ellsworth. I'll let everybody know.
The real El Swearingen was American. And I wrote him that way. But then as we were casting, Ian was so terrific. So then I took that liberty and gave him a different backstory.
Now, with that limey damn accent of yours, are these rumors true that you're descended from the British nobility?
Descended from all them cocksuckers.
Ian's very much anti-royal. He took great pleasure. He insisted on about 12 extra takes, saying that.
My life up flattered and hammered shit. But I stand here before you today, beholden to no human cocksucker, and working a paying fucking gold claim. And not the U.S. government.
I'll tell you one other reason that I wanted to... That I kind of embrace the obscenity. If the theme you're working with is the negation of law, how do you make a viewer experience that what it's like to be in an environment without law? Because obviously the viewer is experiencing in a sort of a passive way an entertainment. And the assault of the language, the sense that there is no protection for the viewer's own sensibilities, I think begins to establish that kind of lawless atmosphere emotionally, where it's a kind of battering that I think ultimately brings the viewer to some sort of felt emotional participation in the environment.
Got it right here.
This is a true story. This guy was shot through the head and lived.
And then he started in beating on me. And I didn't rob you. I didn't, goddamn it.
And they put this guy put this probe right through his noggin too. In the account I read, they said the guy was up and walking the next day, but that's where I believe truth in that story parted company. Some people say history's just a lie agreed upon anyway.
Get the child.
Sure would like to know how he lasted for 20 minutes. Shot straight through the brain.
So prospect in him till Dan brings the Chinaman.
Do you mind if I take him to my place?
Sure, Johnny, help the doc with this guy. Bring the Chinaman to the docks.
I'll bring that sled right in, Doc.
Doc, you drink free today.
And I hope any word of this would keep the gun out of the whore's hand.
That wouldn't come from me.
Bastard did himself in. Come here.
I said to stop.
Tell me in my office. Get the gimp to clean this place up.
Ah, Doc!
Either there's something peculiar about this man's cerebral setup, or they can just write off the forebrain as being the center of...
The Doc is a made-up character. He's kind of based on a guy named Thomas Hunter, who was a surgeon in England in the 17th century, and he was fascinated by human anatomy and collected all sorts of anomalies. There was a guy 7'6" tall. That once Hunter saw him, that guy had no shot at all. He just followed him around, and when the guy keeled over dead, he was right there to collect him.
I expect I'll be there before sundown.
Well, we'll know where to find you.
What in the hell do you mean by that? Did I enjoy a fucking drink? What in the world, that's outlawed.
Thanks for looking at the stock, Jane.
Excuse my ill humor.
She loved Bill.
Certain people wear on the fucking nerves.
She had batter eyes like a virgin there. She's buried next to him in the Deadwood Cemetery. She lived another 40 years, but when she knew she was dying, she went back there so she could be buried next to him.
She likes me better than she likes you.
I don't think you ever banged her, though. I don't believe it.
Get on that woman's wrong.
She told everybody he did.
You know a back way into the camp?
Ooh. Und later after Legret. We don't go to the camp. We go home. Back to Minnesota.
That family, they get massacred later on. I hope I'm not ruining it for you. But that was based on, that was the Metz family. And what the highwaymen used to do is they'd always make their murders look like the Indians had done it to foment the kind of racist environment and distract people from the fact they were getting robbed by their own.
You ever fucking unloaded? Hold on to my horse, I'll show you how to do it.
You know what we're doing. Put your hat back on, stick with your wagon.
And what if I don't?
Stand there, mouthing off, and you'll find out.
Bullock had a terrible temper.
Have a commode for your inconvenience.
Star was always trying to get him out of trouble.
It's free from Star and Bullock Hardware, opening Deadwood as soon as we locate.
You know, Bullock wound up, it wound up Theodore Roosevelt's best friend.
Hurry up and get finished.
And he led the inauguration parade when Roosevelt was elected.
Father's last words there in Vienna before he passed away. Saul, those who can't abide a goddamn fool get slowed down.
He was always, Bullock was, he was a kind of an incomplete personality. And he never had a sort of, his temper always got the best of him when he was called. I think that's why he was drawn to law enforcement, to try and protect himself from himself. And he was always drawn to strong, kind of paternal figures. That's why I wrote him the way I did in his relationship to Hickok, and sort of Hickok sort of raising him.
Don't shoot nobody, because that's bad for my business and it's bad for the camp's reputation. He beat the living shit out of you, didn't he?
Do what you're gonna do to me.
Don't tell me what to do.
Either way this comes out, we'll only have to do it once. What's it to be, Trixie?
These incidents of violence, you know, with the probe going through the guy's head and this with Swearingen, and that, too, I think, brings the viewer to a kind of emotional apprehension of what it's like to live unprotected, where you never know where the story's going to turn. There aren't the conventions of storytelling to protect your expectations.
We heard you might be coming from Cheyenne.
Boy, Dayton Kelly's an ugly human being, isn't he?
We'd all been scalped now by the Sioux. Well, the government would have tossed us out as treaty violators.
That's Dayton. I think he might be my favorite guy.
E.B. Farnham, how do you do?
Charlie, you got some mighty clammy hands there, partner.
E.B. Farnham was a real guy. He was a pure shitbird.
Or on other business?
I'm here to get a room. Can we get two? We're worn out looking at each other.
Separate rooms. I'll arrange that by tomorrow, but today I can't fix it. Unless you kill a guest.
Keith was wonderful. Well, I'm recording this just a little time before the Emmys, and I really felt bad that Keith didn't get an Emmy nomination. I thought he was great, and neither did Ian there. But Ian's going to get another turn at the plate. I'd have to bring Keith back as a ghost, which wouldn't actually be a bad idea. You could do a story like if Jane was hallucinating, you know, had delirium tremens or something, and Hickok came to rebuke her.
Did he order whiskey?
Yeah.
Did he down it, or is he sipping at it?
He's sipping.
Why'd I even ask, huh? Go get Tim Driscoll. Make sure the dude sees you leave.
What should I tell Tim?
Tell him to get over here.
These are all kind of surrogate families that develop. Back, do your
part. All right, Al. As far as Hickok, Al, if I'd have pushed him any harder on his plans, I was afraid he'd shoot me.
Go get Driscoll.
Yes, sir.
Handmaid! Draw handmaid! Guarantee!
It ain't like something's being foisted.
This sequence here, the auction, that was a famous incident in the annals of Deadwood. They had this auction, and their big selling point was the shit pots.
Let's go. Coming out with your fly down might strike the wrong note.
See, look how shy Bullock is. That's why a camp like this was great for him. It drew him out. His voice is too quiet. Now, but see, Jews are born with the understanding how to sell. Listen to Star.
Knee boots, $10. Hip boots, $15.
You got picks, pans, and shovels.
Picks at $12. Shovels at $10 and pans at $8.
You got plaster cradles, prospector's best friend.
Perfected at the Montana Strike.
You got chamber pots to sell you. And if you don't know what one of those is, the man living next to you will appreciate your finding out.
I'll look at your biggest size hip boot.
I'm right here.
You stand by our stock. Any item that don't do what it's supposed to.
Society trying to find its organizing principles in the absence of law was the theme that, the overarching theme that kind of engaged me. And commerce, obviously, is one of those forces that move us toward order. And then there are the parasites, like this hustler here. He was based on a real character named Soapy. They were always working cons, and they'd hang around like vultures around the legitimate businesses and try and fleece people.
Set prices, boys. And first come, first to be served.
Get you squared away.
Maria Queso is the art director. What a job she did on the camp.
No free fields in this house.
This guy's a made-up character, Brom Garrett. But, you know, the tenderfoot, the eastern dude is a staple of this kind of story.
You see a finish to that?
Dilettante always trying to be taken for an expert. People love to see those people robbed.
Does that give you the vapors?
Are you mad about something, Al?
Not mad about nothing. What I can tell you, Brom, things sort out fast in Deadwood. And I vouched for you with Tim Driscoll 2 hours in here last night when I gather you must have been home in bed, sleeping. End result, Tim's just about got his claim sold to E.B. Farnham.
See, E.B. Farnham's part of the con.
Where's Driscoll now?
In here, so I'd assume at his hotel.
You told me he's here by 6.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, E.B. Farnham just saw me here and headed for the door.
I wouldn't know how to interpret that.
I was doing the legwork, Al. I was doing the due diligence. You tell me Driscoll's got money troubles and he's a motivated seller. Fair enough. But how did I know his claim's not played out? I had to do the legwork on that.
I see, fair enough.
Well, that's what I had to ascertain.
Did you do the legwork?
Al?
For God's sake, close your fist.
Cleaned up during the night with 5 more just like it from claim number 9 above discovery. Penned at the Driscoll claim.
All I can say, Brown, while you were out winning the battle, I hope you didn't lose the fucking war.
How?
Who is that? Tim Driscoll. Shit-faced. Let me handle the play.
Oh, my God, he is shit-faced.
Now, one part of the... when you work a con like that, it's... the audience likes to know there's a con going on, but they don't like to know the full reveal until afterwards. And I hope as we go along, I'll say some more about that. Or maybe I'll spare you. This was a real saloon, Nuttall's number 10. This is where he got whiskey. Killed.
2 whiskeys. I'm respecting your privacy, not saying your name, but I certainly recognize you, and I'd like to...
That's Leon Rippey. Look at that mug.
Charlie Utter. Tom Nuttall, Charlie. Tom.
That's Garrett Delahunt. He's playing Jack McCall. That's the guy that kills Hickok.
A.W. Merrick, Mr. Hickok of the...
That's Jeffrey Jones. A.W. Merrick, he was a real guy. Terrible hypochondriac. This, the whole first edition of his paper was he was describing his various afflictions, why the paper wasn't longer.
I won't say no more on the subject, and I'll be through for the fucking evening. I'm not impressed.
So, what brings you to our camp, Mr. Hickok? May I tell my readers...
Warrant out of me in Cheyenne.
You get off of that now, Bill.
Oh, I suppose for a man like you, warrants are a vocational hazard.
That was what the warrant was for, vagrancy. He was passed out drunk and on the streets in Cheyenne.
Anyway, in this camp, warrants don't count.
I'm telling you, he's not impressed. All right? Now, you may apply that to whoever you feel may be my reference. And I intend to gut that son of a bitch at poker whenever I get the chance.
You run that game, can I buy 50 in chips?
I do, and you can. Just settle up after you see how your luck runs.
You feel like playing now, Bill, or you want to take in the rest of the camp?
I feel like playing now.
Draw and 5 stud. Dealer calls the game.
Sounds fair. Later,
Charlie Utter was a real guy. He was, in modern parlance, he would have been called a codependent. He was always trying to take care of Hickok.
Grand surprise. I never thought he'd live long enough for me to meet him.
That's Jerry Jewell. I met her in a drugstore just before we started the shoot, and I thought it'd be an interesting thing to have a character who was handicapped or whatever the goddamn expression is supposed to be. See how a person who was physically challenged would function in an atmosphere like that.
My name's Caroline.
Yeah, well, you'll always be able to meet.
Claim 9 above discovery, $14,000, yes or no? $14,000, yes or no?
No, boy. But make it $14,000.
Spit in your hand. Spit in your hand.
What's his fucking problem?
Nothing. Done. Witness.
That's Dan Hildebrand. He was lovely.
Am I too late?
No, but you're too late for it. I just sold to this goose-looking fella for 14,000.
Will you take 16?
No, thank you, but no.
What a fucking lying cunt you are. Oh, 12,500.
See, they're all in it together.
Yeah, and more than the claim is worth, he says.
16,000. That's 2,000 profit standing over a drink.
I believe events will prove the claim 9 above discovery was worth far more than 16,000, Mr. Barnum.
Oh, unhand.
Now this guy's going to start the freelance and it's going to get him killed.
No, of course I haven't actually seen his fucking money yet.
I'm discounting his banknote. Dan, there's $10,000. I'll weigh 4 out of the other sack right now.
You see, Al's holding a full faith letter of credit for $20,000 from the Bank of New York.
Well, full faith is one thing, but until the money has actually passed hands, you know, between us, the deal isn't done.
The deal is done.
The deal isn't done.
The deal is done.
We spat in our hands, Tim.
What the fuck would you know? I'll fucking knock you into the middle of next fucking week. Now, would you offer me the 16,000?
I suppose, if you're open to further offers.
16,500. Will you close at 16?
It's what always happens when you're trying to rob somebody. Everybody thinks they're a genius.
18.
19.
19,800. That's every cent I can put together.
20,000.
Damn it.
20 once.
That's why I was always such a lousy criminal. Every time I get involved with something like that, halfway through I'd get a bright idea and I'd fuck the whole thing up.
Sold. To the goose-looking man in the shiny suit.
I got it out.
Yes, you did.
Comes to look for business opportunity and sits there losing at poker.
Is he having a bad run? I can't see that far.
You'd have to see back to Cheyenne. He lost his patience. Stays in hands whether he's holding cards or not. How's your crowd in here tonight, anyway?
It's all right.
It's been all right, and you know you could see that damn much. Bill Hickok's an asset to any saloon, any joint he frequents. You agree with me on that or not?
You got a say in that? I mean, as far as where he drinks.
See, he's trying to guarantee some income for Hickok, but Nuttall thinks he's just trying to rob him.
50. What a sport you turned out to be.
You quote a figure.
Well, let's come to one understanding. Any figure I were to come up with, part of that you'd give to him to gamble or piss away, however else he's going to do it. And that'd be the only part he'd know.
I think one of the sources of the civilizing impulse is the need to care for the other, even if that's predicated in neurosis. You know, Bullock, I think, was a marshal because he was half wacky. And the same way, I think that Charlie Utter, you know, needed to take care of Hickok for reasons of his own, but that didn't make it the behavior any less redemptive. She's a junkie. I've always respected that in a person.
Banish all headaches. Spit in your hand, Alma.
What?
Spit. I'm going to show you something.
I promise you'll tell my mother about this.
I bought it. We own a gold claim. This is how we sealed the deal.
And then did everyone dry their hands?
Do you know who I was bidding against? Farnham, who owns this hotel.
Oh, and where was your secret agent?
Dan Doherty. He was tending bar. No one realized how that Dan had helped me reconnoitre.
See, she's getting off now. She doesn't care how big a jerk he is.
He was intermediary. He brokered the deal. Driscoll, the seller, legless with liquor. You will have a vivid entry for an article, and I've told you all the details.
Yes. I've already begun to imagine it.
It's a near thing till the end. I had to go all our 20,000 to turn...
She married this guy for his money to get her dad out of trouble. Her dad was a con man.
The bank to renew my credit. Of course, they'll contact father.
Well, I expect that's inevitable.
Wild Bill Hickok.
When you're raised essentially to,
I'm sure he's going to prospect too,
suit someone else's purpose, sometimes you try and create an artificial environment where you can meet your own needs. I think that's how a lot of junkies, alcoholics, and all that stuff gets started. That's Mr. Wu. I love this guy. I could watch people fed to animals pretty much 24 hours a day. Someone ought to start a channel with that.
How much do you want?
Well, we agreed on 30%. 30% of 20 would be 6. Mm-hmm. So I want the 6,000.
What's 30?
See, swearing you want him to stop at 14.
What the fuck?
Who told you to take him to 20?
Well, you know, I could feel that he had more in him. I don't know, it was just a spontaneous fucking feeling, and I knew that there was more to get.
And you thought 6 more would be the jackpot?
Gee, Swearingen wanted to rob him for more later.
Jesus Christ, you know, if you had further plans, I wish you'd have just said something to me.
Should I tell you when I plan to take a shit tomorrow? Would that be none of your fucking business?
Now he knows he's fucked.
So, 14,000. 30% of that's what is that now?
You know when a roadrunner goes off the cliff, he gets the same kind of look on his mug.
Well, what the fuck arrangement do you suggest now?
What do you suggest?
Oh, Jesus Christ almighty, you're getting a mood like this and I just as soon as... You're not even discussing. Look, let me just have 500, you know, and we'll discuss the rest of it some other fucking time.
Cash or credit of the tables?
Fucking time of trial, the fucking English in you comes out. Fine. I'll have the 500 at the fucking table then. Jesus Christ almighty.
Are we holding markers?
Oh, you're holding markers, all right. You've been holding markers against me and my kind for the past several centuries across both sides of the fucking water. How the fuck do I know? Well, ask Dorothy, he'll know better than me. Credited against the fucking markers, but just let me hold...
That's it. That's how I always used to wind up. I'd start with 50% of a $20 million. I'd wind up with $10 in cash.
And then tell him to come see me.
And thanks for stepping in on the side of right and fucking justice, you deaf dumb bastard.
Fortunately, I was never murdered.
I tell you, Al, you could have knocked me over with a feather when he took him to 20. Did you see me struggling to stay on the path?
This was a real guy, too, the Reverend Henry Wesson Smith.
I'm saving to bring them out. Days I dig on the Foster's water ditch, and nights I watch folks' goods like I'm going to do for yours.
Schedule like that, Mr. Smith. Seems like you have them here in no time.
In Sabbaths, I preach...
Now look at these guys. They don't know what the fuck to do with this. But there's an instinctive kindness in Bullock, see? He just says, well, see, it is where I was born. That's another impulse toward community.
That's when I met up with Mr. Starr. Is that so?
I was born in Austria.
Austria.
Look at how sweet he is.
Wonderful where people come from.
Well, I was born in Austria, and then I grew up in Chillicothe, Ohio.
And then you partnered with Mr.
Bullock. You're just sharing your stories about your background. That's
the Lord is our final comfort, but it's a solace having friends. I know that from past experience. You sure sold up a storm here tonight, didn't you?
We did all right.
Be a few hours, Mr. Smith.
You want to look around? See, so one organizing principle is commerce, and then there's friendship, and then there's other less salutary occupations like this shitbird here.
I seen a terrible thing tonight.
What'd you see?
Seen white people dead and scalped, and men, women, children with arms and legs hacked off.
Where?
See, criminals always got to try out their alibi on people before they ever even have to need to say their alibi. That's how they get fucked up.
How many was it died?
It was the whole family. They was hacked and mutilated. Their parents, 2 children.
The Metz family took the Spearfish Road, going home to Minnesota.
And that was probably down there.
He made a mistake. He didn't realize there was a third kid. Now they know.
There could have been 3 because there was that hacked and screwed around.
See, Smith doesn't suspect them. But Bullock's a natural cop. They got radar for each other.
You probably need a drink.
You called my bluff, Hickok. I was trying to run one. Whoa. Wait on Mary. I got a 3/8 under there.
3/8 wins.
See, he did realize that he's just breaking Hickok's balls.
Here I am, thinking I'm fucking bluffing the 3/8, and I mistakenly outdraw the greatest gunfighter in the world.
Uh-oh.
What?
Saying you're out. Now he's going to make McCall eat a little shit.
Well, what else would I have meant?
That's the last vestige of dignity Hickok has.
3/8's what I meant.
Deal. And he's up, same again.
Jesus Christ, we shake hands or something? Relieve the atmosphere? I mean, how stupid do you think I am?
I don't know. I just met you.
Paradox is, the massacre at Little Bighorn signaled the Indians' death throes, Mr. Rudder.
Now, here's another guy. The press, you know, they never get it fucking right.
Congress will rescind the Fort Laramie Treaty. Deadwood and these hills will be annexed to the Dakota Territory. And we, who have pursued our destiny outside law or statute, will be restored to the bosom of the nation. And...
look at him, look at him.
His bosom mean tit. Same thing.
I ain't nothing against y'all fellas, but I'll soon do my drinking, getting a piece of ass.
First you want people to know about that family.
Yeah, well, what harm is it me meeting my needs for circulating news?
What if the third child's alive?
Listen, mister.
See, Bullock went to a area where there was no law because he was trying to get away from being a lawman so he could make his own fortune. But, you know, our lives choose us. He immediately, look at him, he's on his day, it's like cops on their night off. They say, oh, let's go, let's see, just see if we can find a couple of skulls and kick the shit out of them.
By Indians on the road to Spearfish, and one child may still be alive out there, and it's no one's concern in this saloon.
What's this about a massacre?
God damn it! I ain't going out there again tonight after I just made camp with my scalp by sheer dumb fucking luck!
Ride out and show us the place. I'll guarantee your scalp. You riding?
Yeah. We'll ride.
May I ride? I'd be honored.
Yeah, there's this hypochondria, see.
Here we go.
Hickok lived 2 days after Bullock came to the camp.
Wild Bill fucking Hickok.
You're Marshall in Kansas?
Yeah. You?
Montana.
Come to your senses now?
Yes, sir. The fella's story on this don't hold water.
Hickok had been a lawman in Kansas, except the lawmen, and they weren't really lawmen. There was like reenactments of the war between the states. The cowboys were all from the south, and they'd come north on the cattle drives. And as soon as they delivered the cattle, they'd go nuts. And then the Union, ex-Union soldiers would be hired to murder them. Then as soon as the cattle drive was over, they'd fire the lawmen.
I want you out prospecting in the morning beside him. That claim needs to pinch out.
Oughtn't take but a couple of days. He ain't got much sand.
And Tim Driscoll needs to be seen, too.
No kidding now?
No kidding.
Well, not that anybody asked, but I'd look to Trixie for danger before I'd look to Tim.
No kidding.
Jimmy says the Sioux massacred a family on the Spearfish Road.
A hand come into Nuttall's number 10 telling the story, Mr. Swearingen.
Who was he?
I never seen him before.
Can you get him over here? Is he still in Nuttall's?
They're riding back out to where it happened. Hickok and some others are riding with him.
Gee, Swearingen knows it was whites, and they're probably people that work for him.
How many people downstairs did you tell about this?
he hits Burns.
You let him tell a few people downstairs before you bring this to me?
I brought him as soon as I heard.
That's the way a dysfunctional family works. There's always one kid in the family that gets his shit kicked out of him.
It's fucked up.
That's his job.
Nobody's drinking, nobody's gambling, nobody's chasing tail. I have to deal.
Now the other kid in the family explains Dad to the kid who's always getting hit. Listen to Doherty as he's walking out.
$10 for a ball of dope.
Ball of dope, please, Mr. Swearingen.
Give him a ball of dope.
Come on. I'll take care of you. He's got a lot on his mind, Johnny.
That's a good shot. Walter Hill directed this, the first episode.
Words.
Well, I guess when it starts pissing rain,
watch him work the crowd.
Huh? Now I know words circulating. Indians kill the family on the Spearfish Road. Now it's not for me to tell anyone in this camp what to do. Much as I don't want more people getting
his job is just to keep them drinking and chasing pussy.
Godless thing that these godless, bloodthirsty heathens do. Or even if someone wants to ride out in darkest night. But I will tell you this. I'd use tonight to get myself organized. Ride out in the morning, clear-headed. And starting tomorrow morning, I will offer a personal $50 bounty for every decapitated head of as many of these godless heathens.
That's true. He did offer that. And you notice they never call them Indians. They always call them the godless heathen cocksucker Sioux, or they call them the dirt worshippers. If you're going to commit genocide, it always helps to get a leg up emotionally on it. It's called pseudo-speciation. And you find language which bleaches the other of his humanity. Makes it easier to croak him.
Okay, ladies. Let's go.
She must have done some fancy fucking to keep Al from killing her.
Where's Bill Hickok? Where's Charlie Utter? Give me a drink.
See, that's called a Stockholm syndrome, where you idealize your captor.
All right, Al, I know you got a lot on your mind. That was one hell of a good talk. Look, you got everybody back at the tables doing what they do.
Tell you the truth, for murdering people on the road to Spearfish.
We meet him in the next episode. Al kills him, too.
Make it look like he wins.
That is his speciality.
Hey, is it true? Indians killing white people?
That's the sewer mouth that follows Hickok around.
Why are we standing here?
Riding out tomorrow, daybreak.
Oh, real. Tomorrow. What's your fucking rush? I'm going now. Even without Bill.
See, she's lost without Hickok and Charlie. That's like another sort of surrogate family.
And I don't drink where I'm the only fucking one with balls.
Let her go. She ain't taking any business with it. And don't forget to kill Tim.
This was a tough scene to shoot. The goddamn wolves. They were non-union.
Yeah.
finding this kid, you know, the suffering of the innocent. If there's any good to be brought out of people that does it, then she becomes kind of the emblem of the best possibilities of the camp. That they try and help her. That's a great story. She was a stand-in for the real actress, and the real actress wasn't doing well. Whatever individual weaknesses people have, sometimes they're able to, in a situation like that, you know, she feels lucky just to be able to try and help. She was great, you know, that how she got her name, Calamity Jane. She was a great nurse, and some guy said, you know, in a calamity, send for Jane. When the plague came to the camp, that was sort of her best hour. She wasn't afraid, you know, to get smallpox. She took care of a lot of people. And then as soon as the crisis was over, she'd get shit-faced again. Look at this idiot. All he wants is to impress her. Such a jerk, she'd rather pretend she was asleep. Well, you can see the picture. You probably don't need me. They kill him, too, in a couple episodes. I guess if you bought the whole set, this, I'm not costing myself any profits.
Get to your room. You'll be sleeping on a goddamn pew. You in love?
I find relations between men and women to be fundamentally mysterious. You find that to be the case, too?
You know, I don't intrude on the affairs of others.
That's why I hope to live to be about 1,400.
Problem enough keeping my own life straight. Something's not my affair. I don't pretend it is. Contrary-wise, if you feel like talking about that deadlight, I'll pay a dollar a minute to hear you.
See, that's his way of saying, I see the gun and you're going to get yourself in trouble. She's got the gun between her breasts there.
Don't concern you, Ellsworth.
And fuck us all anyway for the limber dick cocksuckers we are.
Well, I hated to see this guy killed, Dan Hildebrand. He was terrific.
What is it?
Just hush, Tim.
I love to see this. He gets mud in his face. I have a fundamentally lowbrow sensibility. Look, and I like that because his collar's fucked up. He's hungover. That's Brad Dourif. Remember him in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest? A lot of water under the bridge.
Wait for me, goddammit! Just hold on till I'm with you.
She don't mean nothing, Doc. She's just excitable.
See, Star wants Hickok to go help him, so he tells a fib there.
Yeah, I guess I done my duty, and I was glad enough to help.
Stick around. See if she lives.
Nah, I was glad enough to done my duty, and that little one be in my prayers.
Get down off your horse.
You listen to me. I'm an innocent man. It was them Indians, goddammit!
Too much ransacking and too many goods left behind. Someone was after money.
Goddammit, if I had something to do with what happened, why'd I come to this camp, huh?
Maybe when it got thick out there, you ran.
See, that's what makes a good lawman, a guy who's half a criminal himself.
I get to a Pharaoh layout. I felt that way sometimes after a kill.
Get down off your horse. Or face the consequences.
Is that you or me, Montana?
See, sometimes you bond over murder, too. The fact that he called him Montana, that cemented their friendship. Look at him giving the thumbs up. Comes the end of the day, everybody gotta go to their Jones. I sure thought he was gonna kill her when I wrote this scene.
Yeah.
But then the way we did it felt right when we were on a set. Then I went back, rewrote the script, and pretended like I knew it all along. Well, that was our first one. I hope you enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it myself and talking about it with you. I hope you'll come back and see us for our second season. It's a good song. It's called The Hog of the Forsaken.